Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media. Want to make your money make sense? Listen to Business Sense every Monday to Thursday, 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. and make sense of your money.
Now, our shapeshifter today is a worshipper, a believer in Christ, a husband and a father. We are joined by award-winning gospel singer and songwriter Everton Mlalazi, with albums such as In the Presence, Volume 1 and 2, and collaborations with Benjamin Dube, Xoli Mngwango, and Ladysmith Black Mambazo. The distinct sound of his music will lead you into a place of worship wherever you are. And I believe he's already joining us on the line. Good evening, sir.
Good evening, Tapelo. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking. And yourself?
I am very well. How is it where you are? And maybe I should take time to also greet the listeners if they are tuned in.
Indeed. Well, it is very cold where I am in Irene, Johannesburg. Well, Pretoria, where we're broadcasting from. So it's we are in the thick of things when it comes to winter. And it's becoming a little bit difficult to wake up in the morning. How's your side?
Zimbabwe is very cold.
Yeah.
It's become chilly, I think, since the turn of July.
Yeah.
June had been interestingly warm for winter.
Okay.
And we were asking ourselves, is it going to be like this throughout? But however, here we are. We are in July, and it's now quite chilly.
Yeah, I can imagine. Eh? I think it almost was giving you guys false hope that it's not going to be cold. But hey, there you are. It's becoming a little bit cold. Now, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it. And how was your day?
My day was fine. Quite a busy one with work. But, nothing really that we can't handle.
Ah, fantastic. Really appreciate it. On Thursdays, we do this thing called Shapeshifters. And really what we do here is we try and bring people like yourselves who are leading in different industries, in academia, in business, songs, religion, and all this sort of stuff, to just have a conversation with you, particularly because there could be some young people that are looking up to you, who might never necessarily get a chance to talk to you and, try and find out, how did you get to where you are, where did you start, and how are you handling things at this particular stage? And so that's why we have these kind of conversations, which we really appreciate you guys taking time out of your own schedules to give us that time. So I want to go back then and start at the beginning with you and say, when people say Everton Mlalazi and they then say ubani lo, who are we talking about? How do you describe yourself?
So, Everton Mlalazi is, you would say, singer-songwriter from here in Zimbabwe. Married to my wife, Gamachirai. We have two children at the moment, two girls, Natasha and Kisha. We also, besides the music, I would say I'm a statistician by background.
Okay.
Well, obviously, it led to many opportunities into now an investment and financial analyst. Who also does what we call structured finance, mergers and acquisitions as well. However, I spend a lot of my time, thinking about how to create more music now, for the glory of God, but also just to edify people who are obviously going through various, you know, situations in life.
I would like to explore that career as well in just a moment from now. But where were you born? And if you were to take a few steps back to where you were born, what were some of the challenges growing up as a young person?
Well, I was born in I was born in Harare.
Yeah.
I was born in Harare, Zimbabwe. However, I would say my early childhood was in the southern parts of the country, which is where I come from, which is in Matabeleland. And then, you know, came back to Harare, where, because we were in Matabeleland because that's where my mom was.
Yeah.
When I was born, she took me back to Matabeleland. Because then, you know, the younger us used to have our fathers would live in town, close to where they worked, and our mothers would live in the rural, the rural areas, and that's what happened. So I lived with mom, and then we came back to Harare, and from there, I grew up in Mashonaland, not in Matabeleland. And then obviously over the years would shuttle between Matabeleland and Mashonaland, because home where we come from is Matabeleland, but Harare is where I ended up growing up. So I have an interesting history with how I grew up. And maybe also just to say, you know, and growing up, whilst we came to Harare because my father was working here, I think I was around, I was around 14 years old when my father had an accident, a car accident. And when he was involved in a car accident, he then was rendered incapacitated to continue working. And from that time, you know, from the time life changed, the life of having a breadwinner and our father, who now incapacitated to work, just made our life very difficult. So, but it's a good thing because, you know, God carried us through a lot of sacrifices, because then, even though they deemed my father incapacitated to work, he continued to work now by himself, you know, to try and fend for us. And I believe that he did a very good job in doing that, because then we continued.
Now, how did that affect you, or kind of contribute towards your trajectory from then on? Like you said, from having a breadwinner in the house where things were, I suppose, okay, and now things were a little bit different. Now, how has that shaped you?
So that's the part that shaped me into a stronger person who also had to face disappointment, obviously at a young age. The disappointment of being a teenager who, I just started my teenage life, and we sort of had everything we needed, and suddenly we didn't have. It obviously meant that in terms of fitting in with friends, it was now different, because they had that and I didn't have. When I went to school, they had all of these accessories, which I didn't have. So obviously it became a very difficult time to grow up, because then I had to be very conscious, super conscious about myself all the time. Am I fitting in? Am I not? But it made me a stronger person, because then I decided I'm going to focus on improving myself because I really want to make sure that when I grow up, I also, take care of my parents. Given the sacrifices I saw them, giving so that me and my siblings could also have a life. So it made me a stronger person mentally, but it also created a worshiper in me because this is the time when I would really, meditate upon a lot of hymns actually, and that really, that's the time I really, figured that I am a worshipper.
Sure, that's amazing. Matabeleland, what were some of the issues there?
In Matabeleland, I was young, but then so I can't really speak more about what was happening. But then what I recall is that, I mean, this is where things like morning worship. I was introduced to morning worship with my mom, evening worship before we slept. It continued when we went back to Harare and we were all there. We always knew that when we started hearing number 8, Nkosi Ekuseni, it was like an alarm to say, wake up, because it's time for prayer. As well as was number 31, Langalo Mphefumlo Wami. When that song started in the evening, we knew it was time to switch off the TV. We knew it was time for prayer. I mean, Matabeleland, I have not so many memories except the memories of that. That's when I was introduced to worship in the morning. But then obviously growing up, lots of memories. Except then that, in Matabeleland, when you went, you always found the homestead. The homestead was such that there was always auntie, ubabomdala, or so all these relatives around the place. So you always knew you would meet everybody there. Moving back to Harare means you're very far apart from them. And sometimes you only meet because there's a wedding. Or maybe a funeral, which is obviously not as good.
Sure. And I suppose you've carried that into your own family today, time for worship in the morning or in the evening, and has become almost like a culture in the house as well.
The tradition is gold. I have, to everyone I've spoken to, I have said, that tradition is gold because I have a little brother, a young brother who has left the church. He now drinks and also all does all sorts of things. One thing I know is that when we go to meet for the family gatherings almost every year when we meet, he always wants and he likes that time when we worship in the morning and in the evening, because he says it reminds him of how he grew up. And trust me, every time that happens, his wife always tells me that 2, 3 weeks, or even a month after we have met, he stops drinking, he stops all sorts of things, he even goes to church. Because that tradition kind of always reminds you of your roots. Because then every time we sang, we knew that my father would open the Bible or the Word and share very deep insights from the Word of God. And so it always has this reminder in it that even when I was in boarding school, I knew that I didn't have to have anyone wake me up for prayer. I would wake up by myself, and pray. Even when I went to university, I did the same by myself in the room I lived in, because it was a tradition. And so now with my family, it is the same. My children know that And these are the songs that they learned first, number 81 and number 82 and number 31.
Sure, that's beautiful. I love the, you know, calling it, it's gold. The tradition is gold. Really, really love that. Talking about now university and all that, I know you're also a business person, but the statistics bit of it, did that find you? Did you always love it? Or was it something that you realized when you, I suppose, got to university? Or you really love statistics?
No, so when I grew up, I was always a maths person.
Okay.
It was known by colleagues and all that Everton is glued and is wired when it comes to maths.
Yeah.
So when I went to varsity, it was easy to pick statistics. But however, I picked statistics because I didn't have enough, points, we'll call them points, for me to do the program that I really wanted to do.
Mm.
And the program I really wanted to do was actuarial science.
Okay.
But then I couldn't have it. So I said the best route to doing something like that would be a qualification in either maths or statistics.
Mm.
And then after that, do financial maths. And so I didn't even then have to do actuarial science. But the fact that I then did finance, I'm, chartered financial analyst as well. So after doing all of those things, it then became apparent that I had followed my dream, obviously via a long route.
Sometimes we take those detours to get to where we are supposed to be and all that. That's really interesting. I know that maths is almost like a nightmare for a lot of us. You know, when you think about maths and you're like, yo, not this thing again and all that. And it's interesting to find that there are people who are generally, drawn to it and they love it and they excel in it, which is amazing. So you did the course. Where did it lead you in terms of employment?
Interestingly, it led me to first of all, after I did statistics, I didn't find a job.
Okay.
But my uncle asked me to go and lead his business whilst he was away.
Okay.
He was living in Egypt at the time. So I went to lead the business working with an aunt who was there. And then after 2 years, I then went to being like a finance manager in the NGO for working for some non-governmental organization.
Yeah.
I was doubling that with monitoring and evaluation, which then eventually became my passion because then I became an M&E expert.
Okay.
Very glued in research, especially data and analytics, I became quite successful in that area until I moved completely into the private sector now. And then I started moving into business slowly. So things then worked that way.
What would you say are one or two challenges so far that I suppose you've experienced it then, before we even get into the business now, but then was it the, getting a job that was the biggest challenge that comes to mind, or was there any other as well?
Yes. Getting a job was very difficult.
Mm.
So that comes to mind, the fact that it was difficult to actually find, to get a job.
Mm.
And then secondly, when I started working with my uncle said to me, you don't need money.
Mm.
So he wasn't paying me, but he was paying my mom, his sister.
Mm.
He was saying, your mom needs the money. I can take care of you. I'll do it. So I left him going to work for an NGO, mainly because I was running away from that. But I thought that it gave me a lesson, It gave me a lesson from that time until now. I value relationships. I value family. Even when I have little, I have to share. It kind of taught me that. It was a challenge, but it also taught me that even, when it's heydays, I must share. Even when we have the little, we must share.
Oh, yeah. That's amazing. And then the business then, what motivated that?
Pardon?
The business, slowly moving into business, what motivated you to start a business? I mean, a lot of people, we've got a segment on Wednesdays where we talk to entrepreneurs, and one of the things you find is that it's a hard thing to do. It's not an easy thing to do to run a business. What motivated you to take another big struggle thing that's surely very difficult?
I mean, it's certainly difficult, but then as you grow, you realize that you've done this job, you've done that. You may get to a point where you must then, you know, wean yourself from working and start running something. However, in coming up with the business, that's where the issue is. Mm. It is really what are you responding to? What is the problem?
Mm.
You know, in whatever business that you want to do, what is the problem? What are you responding to?
Mm.
In most instances, people just want to do a business because they want the money, or because somebody has said to them, "Look, you need to run a business," or because they saw Everton running a business and they think, "Oh my God, business looks very lucrative." But do you understand what problem he's trying to address? Because the reason for setting up the business or my business in the manner that I have is because I'm trying to address a certain problem.
Mm.
And I will understand the problem so that I understand the solution so much that I can try and make it in that particular business.
Mm.
Yeah.
So what problem are you solving? So that's a very important one. Now let's talk about the business of music. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The business of music now. How did that one come about? And you've made a few collaborations along the way. How has that been?
So music, you will know, Tapela, like in our church, we've been singing since time immemorial, like since we grew up.
Mm.
All we've been doing is singing.
Mm.
That's what we've been doing.
Mm.
But however, what we have not done for many of our young people is to give them platforms to really then get exposed.
Yeah.
So we have fine vocalists. I think most of, I still believe that the, you know, most talented vocalists, you will find them in the Adventist church.
Yes, true.
But what happens is that we have sort of closed that space into such that the only thing they do is to sing in church every Sabbath, you know, go and sing from one church to the other.
Mm.
That exposure of then going out and ministering with others of different religions, but speaking the same word, for me has made it so easy for people to relate with Adventism, because now they're saying, "Oh, so you are an Adventist."
Mm.
We didn't think that we could have an Adventist singing with us here.
Mm.
And some people now even are always saying, I really wish I could understand more about Adventism.
Mm.
So again, the reason why I decided to like really go all out with the music was because I really thought that there is an untapped market. An untapped market, you know, where we must really go, where people are really waiting. For your information, we did what was called Happy Homes and Virtual Hymns.
Mm.
With my wife, a program that my wife started, where we were doing virtual hymns every Friday evening during COVID. And the number of people it reached out to, Adventists, non-Adventists alike, especially non-Adventists, I used to say to my pastor, I think that what is just left is for you to call these people, you know, and teach them some more and put them in a baptismal pool. Because they now know every hymn. They now know the teachings because of those platforms that, you know, that my wife created. I really appreciate her for doing that. It made me then realize that there's more work there, and that's why that was the reason for really venturing big time in music. In terms of the collaborations, you're saying Bishop Benjamin Dube, Olim Duango, very amazing, you know, musicians in their own right. Even Soweto Gospel Choir, we did with them. very humble people, especially Soweto Gospel Choir, with the Grammy that they have won. Very humble. We worked on songs. They understood. We did Inyang Nkulu with them. They understood the mission. They did it. It was amazing. And I believe that the energies, all of them, when you talk to them, are like, we don't have such, you know, amongst ourselves. We see something different in you. Even people in Zimbabwe who are in the gospel music industry, who are non-Adventists, will tell you that something different about you that we didn't have in the industry until you came. And I believe that it all talks to our upbringing as Adventists.
That's beautiful. We're going to end the show with Inyanga Nkulu, by the way. So it's on my list of songs that I should be playing in the next few minutes. I want us then to jump into your relationship with money. How would you define it?
Relationship with?
With money.
I think that the relationship is fickle, to be honest.
Okay.
I believe that God gives us resources so that we can further the mission or the very reason for our existence, which is me. So I also believe that money can be abused.
Yeah.
It has been said it's the, you know, others call it it's the root of all evil. You know, however money makes things happen. What things? What are these things? And I think that when we are less focused, when we don't know the things, we then use money willy-nilly. Yeah. That's why relationship with money is fickle. If you understand and if you are focused, if you understand the assignment, understand why you're there, I take care of my family using money so that other people who see me taking care of my family can say, this is a good family. This is a good man who takes care of his family. I wish I could follow his values. I use money to fund my passion, which is music. What music? Music to evangelize, music to share with the world. You get what I mean?
Yeah.
So that is my relationship. That is my relationship with money. I have a very good relationship with money.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. I think you're one of the few people who would say that. You know, especially in today's world, one mistake that you think you've made with money.
One mistake.
Yeah.
It is thinking that because I have it, I then forget the reason why I have it. I get less focused, then I want to buy this and that. I want to buy material things and then forget the reason for having it.
Yeah.
At that point, sometimes God also tries to teach you a few lessons. You begin to lose it a bit.
Eish. Yeah, the losing part is not the nicest. To your kids, what are some of the money lessons you're teaching them?
Well, I'm teaching them that money is worked for.
Yeah.
Yeah. I teach them that you can't just have money. That's why sometimes we make them do daily chores and we say, these are things that you must do. But sometimes we make them go an extra mile.
Okay.
Make them do other things. Like, let's go into gardening. Today you're going to do more than what you normally do. And if you do an extra mile, you get a salary. You get payment for it, you know. The reason is because we just want them to know that money is worked for. Don't have people trying to give you money, because when they give you money, you don't know where it came from. You don't understand who gave it to them. How did they even get it? Yeah.
Sure. That's an important one, because then they will learn to be cautious, I suppose, about where the money is coming from. I think a lot of the corruption that we are seeing is because people don't ask, where did this money come from, you know? We are happy to take on monies that we don't even know where they come from, and you find
that we don't understand the relationship. Exactly.
And you find that it's corruption money, or it's money that's embezzled somewhere, and all those sort of stuff, and then we find ourselves in problem. As we draw close to an end, if you were to go back to your younger self, what is the one advice you'd give yourself?
I think I would have worked harder, to be honest. I would have wanted to be an actuarial scientist, an actuary. I did work hard, but I think I should have worked harder. Sure. I let the situation at home to really, you know, kind of draw me back, because I was feeling sorry for myself sometimes and didn't work so hard as I should have been. So I think that is something that I could have done better. Yeah.
And what would you do differently now?
What would I do differently now? I think I need to. There is a lot of work, Dapelo. Like there's so much work, especially in ministry. I really wish I could work and have my company in such a, or my work in such a place where it can run itself. And I also spend, you know, more time in ministry. Yeah.
Sure. Is that where your 10 years plan maybe could be?
It certainly is. It certainly is, where now you have, you know, you have your investments rolling out properly to a point where now you can actually spend more time in ministry, using the very resources that God is giving you through the investments you made now.
Sounds like a solid 10-year plan. Any final words to our listeners? What would you say to a young person listening to you, maybe admiring you, following you? You know, what would be the one message you say to them?
In my second album, In the Presence, Volume 2, I sing a song called Noma Kunje Sizophumelela. I did that song with Ladysmith Black Mambazo. It says, don't lose focus. Forward ever, backwards never. So many times, because we lose focus, the hard situations and times that we face make us to actually drown. And then at that point, we want to retreat. We want to go back. So I'm saying to someone, if you read Psalms 23, yes, it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. But it says, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. Why? Because thou art with me. For any Christian out there, just know that God is with you. Set yourself out for something that is that you want to do, and do it. Have a vision in life. Make sure you decide what is it that you want to do. Pray about it. God will show you what it is, and do it. But by saying do it, I'm not saying it will be easy. There will be pitfalls. There will be, you know. But again, forward ever, backward never. One step that you drag forward is better than sitting down. You drag it forward, it helps you drag another one forward.
Sure. That's beautiful. Thank you so much, sir, for joining us. We really appreciate it. And
thank you so much, Dapelo, and thank you so much, listeners. May God bless you too.
Thank you so much. That was Mr. Everton Mlalazi talking to us this evening about his business, where he comes from, and what he's doing. It's a beautiful conversation.
You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.